Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show, Friday edition of the show today. We are one day removed from the NBA being suspended. So what better day and guest to have on than Joe Mullenix from Grizzly Bear Blues. Man, what's going on?
The people demanded it, and you finally allowed it to happen. I'm sure there were dozens of people, dozens of listeners, Mark, clamoring for Joe Mullenix to be back on Locked On Grizzlies. And you finally allowed for it to be for their thirst to be quenched. So thank you, Mark King.
You know how many DMs I've gotten asking where Mullenix is?
At least zero. At least zero DMs wondering when Joe Mullenix is going to be back on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.
You have no idea. Either way, it doesn't matter. I've been super busy. I was out last week. My good friend and your good friend, Sean Coleman, a guest host of the show from Grizzly Bear Blues.
I did a great job. Sean Coleman podcast.
It was a great job, as always. Let's get into it, though. We're going to talk about on the show today. Again, like I mentioned in yesterday's episodes, we are going to have daily episodes. They might not be as long, but they will be there in some capacity. I don't know what we're going to talk about every day, but we're going to figure that out as we go. On today's show, however, Joe wrote a great article over at Grizzly Bear Blues, which is going to kind of be our topic of conversation. So if you haven't read it, I would say pause this show, go read it, and then come back. Just make sure you come back to the show and listen to our discussion of that article. He got some mailbag questions, and that's what we're going to talk about. But first, the elephant in the room, obviously the NBA has been suspended because of the coronavirus and everything that is surrounding it. Obviously, that was the big domino to fall. Once that happened, and I'm convinced that there was nothing, none of this would have ever happened if we didn't have the NBA doing what they did. Then you had the NCAA, obviously, that came out today, but just tons of sports leagues. It affects my job directly. As you know, I'm a producer for the NFHS Network, which is a national high school network. So we have a ton of high school conferences that I'm directly responsible for doing the video, producing all the broadcasts for those. Ton of, you know, high school conferences and championships being canceled all over the country. But I'm not sure any of this happens without the NBA doing what they did. I think people can point to that and go, look, if the NBA can do it, a national basketball association, a league where people get paid millions of dollars, we can cancel our high school tournament.
I think that what people fail to realize, and the NBA, well, I will give them some credit because you have to make the decision. Let's be real. The teams were warming up, right? Like, it was right before the game was supposed to start between the Jazz and the Thunder that doctor, you know, runs out onto the court and informs everyone that Rudy Gobert has tested positive for coronavirus. So there's nothing else to do at that point. Like, you have to make that call. But I guess even in that reality, you get credit for making it, even though it was the only call to make.
Sure.
When you're in these spots, and I know you can relate to this, Mark, as a parent and other people that are listeners that have kids, you understand that your kid's going to be disappointed when something goes wrong, or you tell them that the ice cream shop, you're going to go get ice cream for dessert, and you show up, and for some reason the ice cream shop is closed. Or, you know, I'm sure there's parents across the country, I believe they said they're closing Disneyland or Disney
World. And Disney World now.
Yeah. Excuse me. So you want to be the person who is bearing the bad news, not the person creating it, if that makes sense. And when you apply that concept to this, everybody was just waiting for the first domino to fall in terms of, okay, the NBA did it, now it's okay for me, if that makes sense. And you see it not just in sports. You see it in school closures. You see it in the amusement parks. You see it in all these different areas of life that we take for granted, to be honest with you, how fluidly we're able to go from a 17,000-seat arena to our homes to a school the next day to a gym where there's a ton of people. You know, we have access to a style of life that not everybody does in this world, to be honest with you. And I think that I've been saying it, you know, the last couple of days, things like this make us realize just how interconnected we are. So I do think the NBA deserves some credit. I'm not trying to trash them for that. I do think the fact that they've acknowledged Adam Silver announced officially on Inside the NBA on Thursday night that it's going to be at least 30 days. You know, to just do it for a week and then think this is miraculously going to fix would show a pretty strong ignorance to what the problem is in terms of community spread and undiagnosed cases. We don't have enough test kits in this country, Mark. We're right. never going to know how many people have this virus because we don't have enough kits to test people. So in the absence of mass testing, the other thing that has been proven to work in other countries that have slowed the spread and gotten below that curve in terms of not overwhelming the healthcare system is mass quarantining. And that's what we have control over at this stage. So credit to the NBA to an extent that they were the first domino to fall or the first shoe to drop. And credit to everybody else that has followed. I mean, Mark, canceling NCAA March Madness, that is a billion-dollar industry. It's a B. Like, that's not an over-exaggeration. That is one of the most profitable sporting events in the entire world. And think about the gambling. Think about all the money that is not going to be made off of all of these events that have been canceled. To me, obviously, people joke about Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. Oh, everybody pays attention when celebrities or athletes contract these things. I started paying attention when the money was put where the mouth was. And you start seeing these things getting canceled. And lots of jobs are being lost. And lots of money is being missed out on being made. And there's going to be consequences for that across our economy and other places. But when people are willing to say, okay, the public health crisis is larger than the bottom line, that's when you really get my attention. And that's obviously only happened the last couple of days. So I've done my own practicing in terms of washing my hands and all the hygiene things they talk about. But in terms of this, like being a true, okay, life is going to be different for the next couple of months at least. That all has only really come to fruition when like I said, people were putting their money where their mouth was and being willing to sacrifice the being in the black, so to speak, for the common good of folks that, you know, maybe you won't get the virus or maybe you won't be in the ICU. Maybe you won't need a breathing tube. But the amount of people that will and how, if that's not kept in check, it could very well overwhelm our hospitals. And that's where things get really ugly, just how skittily. That's a lesson that it looks like we're learning a little bit. And that's a good thing. I think it's going to save lives.
It is a precarious situation because you get into, you know, like you mentioned, it's a billion-dollar industry, the NCAA, which is also another conversation for another time, which is crazy that our student athletes are not paid, but whatever. But still, it is a billion-dollar industry, and it's a precarious situation because you have a lot of people who depend on this money. Obviously, like I'm in a situation where I work from home. My wife is a stay-at-home mother, so she works from home as well. And we have the benefit of we literally never really go anywhere. Like our whole family is in our house almost all the time, especially in the summers. We're all here every day, everybody. So for us, it's kind of life as normal. But for lots of other people who depend on money, who are in service industry jobs, there are a lot of people, like you mentioned, that will be out of jobs, that will they will not have that kind of situation. And so it's a precarious situation because you have to quarantine, you have to shut these things down because that's how it gets spread. If it spreads more, you know, get overrun our hospitals, things like that. That's what you fear. That's what you're trying to prevent. But at the same time, it takes a real impact on the economy. It takes a real impact on real people who, you know, may not be able to pay their mortgage. So here's to hoping that something drastic happens in terms of lenders and things like that, that there's lots of forgiveness is being taken. You know, those steps are being taken because there are a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people that are affected by this just in terms of going to the work every day because they're going to be sick and they're still going to go to work because they don't have paid leave or they can't afford to take off. They don't have any sick days, anything like that. So they're going to go back to work and spread it even more. So hopefully, you know, we can get something done. But you're right. I mean, it's a huge deal. And if you don't understand that, you're probably not taking it serious. And I think whenever the NBA canceled everything, when they suspended their season, that's when everybody was like, oh shit. Like this is a real thing. Like if that's a real thing to happen.
Yeah, it really does wake you up, so to speak, in terms of opening your eyes to what's happening, because there's definitely an air, and, you know, teenagers have it pretty intensely, and then they get in their first car accident or their first bit of bad something happens to them in their lives, and they snap a little bit. But the idea of invincibility, right? Like drunk driving, yeah, that's a problem, that's a bad thing. It can't happen to me. I'm going to drive buzzed, and then you get in a car accident, and that snaps you out of it a little bit and helps you realize your mortality. go back to the swine flu, or H1N1, whichever one it was, about 12 years ago now. You go back to MRSA and SARS and all these other, you know, if you're a student of history like me, and you go back and you think about the flu pandemic of 1918 and obviously the polio epidemic and all sorts of other diseases, you know, history repeats itself. And this isn't the first time that there's been this type of health crisis, and it's not going to be the last. But what makes this unique is the way that it can really kind of attack the elderly in our society, the way that it can move so freely and so quickly across populations, and the way that you can be a carrier and not even necessarily know it. And I've talked to our friends over at Sports 56, Greg and Eli, about this. You know, in the American mentality, how many times do people go to work sick? I can think of at least five times in the last year that I've gone to work with some sort of stomach ailment, or I've gone to work because even though I had what I thought was the flu, you know, I went because I thought that I, you know, if it was football season, you bet your ass I was going to be there because I had a football game to get ready for. Or if it was, you know, April, I had spring practice. I had work to do. I had, you know, there's always something, and I'm not unique. Right. I'm not special. That is very much a American thought process. You stay home when you're incapacitated more than you stay home when you're sick. And maybe this becomes a stepping stone towards, okay, maybe that's not the best idea. You stay home when you're sick no matter what. But my point is, how many people were carrying the coronavirus, didn't know that it was the coronavirus, and somebody who's in their 20s or 30s, it doesn't impact them the same way. They think they've got a cold, a really bad cold, or even maybe a mild case of the flu, and then they spread it to somebody that's in their 70s or 80s, a family member, a coworker, and all of a sudden they're in the ICU because you decided to go to work that day. I think that people are losing sight of empathy a little bit. Just because I killed you, or just because your children are going to be okay. We were talking about before we came on the show, it's weird that this is it's almost like the little kids are the safest ones in this, which is a good thing. That's definitely a silver lining. You and I are both fathers, so we're happy that the kids are good. But at the same time, you know, just because our families, you and I and our kids and our wives, they're more than likely going to be all right. That doesn't mean that we should go watch the Memphis Grizzlies play the Portland Trailblazers on a Thursday night because we want to, and this is inconveniencing us. We have to have a little bit more empathy than that and understand that if we overwhelm our healthcare system, we may not die in the here and now, but our economy and all the economic issues that are occurring as we speak are only going to become more pronounced, and they're only going to become more long-term because they're going to be systemic instead of symptomatic.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, it's something there are a lot of things that are probably wrong in our country and the way we go about things, and paid leave is one of the biggest issues. I think that people suffer, because you're right. A lot of people go to work when they're sick and they probably shouldn't have to. I shouldn't have to do that, but let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about actual Grizzlies basketball after the break. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Joe Monix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. Let's talk a little bit about basketball. We've talked about a virus that has ravaged this country in the first segment. You had a fan mailbag kind of article come out. And so let's start. There was you had two parts of this article. So let's start one. We'll do one, and then we'll take a break, and we'll do the other. The first question that someone had, or they were talking about, is the idea that who's going to be traded in this offseason. Kyle Anderson or Gorgui Dieng? They ask you specifically, would you trade Kyle Anderson or Gorgui Dieng to keep Jackson and Melton? Basically, who's going to be traded this offseason? I'll let you respond on kind of how your thought process was, and I kind of get my thought as well.
Well, the interesting thing about this Grizzlies front office, and kudos to Zach Kleiman and Jason Wexler, Tayshaun Prince, those guys have done a tremendous job of building this team. I don't necessarily think they have to do anything. First and foremost, they could re-sign D'Anthony Melton, trade yet a late first-round pick in this draft if there's a player they really like, or somebody that falls a la Brandon Clark. They have the assets to be able to do that again, and maybe that's all they decide to do and they run it back next year. I think that's, I don't want to say probable, but I would put it at about 50-50 right now. I mean, if you assume that everybody gets better, there's nobody that's really aging out that's a part of your core. So another year playing together, another year of improvement, I mean, you'll compete for the playoffs. I think people need to remember that Golden State will be back to close to full strength next year, and it's probably going to be harder for Memphis to be in the playoff mix next season than it was this season. It doesn't mean it's impossible. It just makes it a little bit more difficult, and obviously they weren't projected to be that to begin with. But my point is, I don't necessarily think they have to trade anybody. What I do think is interesting is they have two players, one in Kyle Anderson, who I'm a big fan of, as you know, and one in Gorgui Dieng, who don't seem to be long for the Grizzlies in terms of a long-term fit with this new organization, new coaching staff. Kyle Anderson isn't a guy who's a pace and space shooter like what Taylor Jenkins wants to do, especially offensively. What Kyle Anderson thrives as is as a point forward who facilitates offense. He attacks the basket. He works well in the mid-range. He does those kinds of things well on the offensive side. And then defensively, he's extremely versatile. He has length. He can defend a variety of positions. Depending on matchup, he can defend the 1 through 5. And obviously that holds tremendous worth in the modern NBA. But his offensive game is limited. And when you have the nickname of slow-mo, you're probably not a great player in terms of pace. He's not a three-point shooter. He's not a scorer. And I do think that because he lacks in those scoring stats and those counting numbers, he is not really beloved by Grizzlies fans, perhaps as much as he should be. Then you have Jiang, who obviously Memphis, it was a good trade to bring him in instead of James Johnson. I like that Jiang is here. I think he's a good backup big man. But at the same time, at least Kyle Anderson, if we're talking about flawed players, at least Kyle has versatility. He can play the 2, the 3, the 4, perhaps even the 5. Gorgui Dieng is a center, and he is best case scenario when everybody's healthy, the third best center on the roster. You've got Jonas Valanciunas, who's had a great season, one of the best value big men in the NBA. Obviously, he has his flaws defensively. So when you want to try to get a stop defensively, or if it's closing time in a game and you want to have your best defensive lineup on the floor, you're probably going to take Valanciunas out and put Jaren Jackson Jr. at the 5 and Brandon Clark, maybe even a Kyle Anderson, but more than likely Brandon Clark, there at the 4. And now you have switchability on the perimeter. You have rim protection, obviously, in Jaren, athleticism with Clark and lateral speed. That's just better than Jiang in terms of what he provides. What Gorgui was supposed to bring over with him from Minnesota in terms of spacing, he hasn't done it as a member of the Grizzlies. I think he's played 12 games and he's shot about 22% or so from three-point line, I should say. To put that in perspective, Kyle Anderson, who's not a three-point shooter, is shooting better this season for the Grizzlies from beyond the arc than Gorgui Dieng is. So those are two guys that are probably not meant for the Grizzlies long-term. If you take those contracts, especially Dieng's expiring deal, and you pair them with a first-round pick or two, which the Grizzlies obviously have some of those to spare, and maybe you tag a young player, depending on the type of player coming back. Perhaps you're willing to trade Tyus Jones. Perhaps you're willing to trade a D'Anthony Melton later on down the road, like closer to the trade deadline next year. You're going to have the young players and the talent in place to go get a scoring wing who's better than what you currently have. And we'll talk more about Dylan Brooks in the last segment. But no disrespect to Dylan, I think Dylan's best role might be as a reserve. So if you can go out and get a Buddy Hield, if you can go out and get a Devin Booker, a Zach LaVine, a Bradley Beal, or even to a lesser extent, I mean, we saw Terrence Ross completely cook the Grizzlies this past Tuesday night before the season was suspended. The last game for Memphis was that tough loss against the Magic. Imagine if the Magic said yes to a Kyle Anderson for Terrence Ross in a first-round draft pick trade. How much better that would make the Grizzlies almost immediately. So I think that they have the pieces in place to make those types of deals now. And those two players, because Anderson wasn't a front office signee of this new regime, he doesn't really play a style that's conducive to what Taylor Jenkins wants to do. Gorgui Dieng has an expiring contract. He's not nearly as versatile as Anderson. He can't play multiple positions like a Brandon Clark or a Jaren Jackson Jr. can. Because of those things, those two guys, plus the money they make, they're more malleable in terms of what you can do with them via trade. Whether you want to get one player, you want to bring in a superstar that's on a near max contract, you want to bring in a role player like a Terrence Ross, all those things are on the table the way that they've built this roster and the assets that they have. I just believe that it's also very possible that they truly kick the can of free agency down the road to 2021. They let those contracts expire, and they look for somebody in that free agent class instead, and they hold on to those assets at least for now. So it's very unlikely that they keep all those young players and all those draft picks, everything they've gotten. They probably are looking to make a move, and those two guys, for the reasons I outlined, are probably the ones that are most likely to be shifting to somewhere else over the summer and then perhaps even before the trade deadline next year.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting in terms of who doesn't fit. I think that you're right on Jang in terms of just his fit overall. I mean, he was obviously the better scenario for James Johnson. They needed a backup big. So, and just in terms of the money you make, I think that's probably your trade chip, if you will. There's a lot of things you can do with that amount of money. Same kind of scenario we talked about for a long time with the Iguodala trade. So I think you're probably right. In terms of Kyle Anderson, this can be interesting because we had this conversation on the show, I think on Monday or Tuesday, in terms of the minutes when we thought Justice Winslow was going to come back this week, who was going to get squeezed out. And I kept coming back to Kyle Anderson as the person that would get squeezed out. Now, that's with Josh Jackson playing, all those guys playing. So I think this year it would really depend on if they went out and got some other type of wing. If they did go out and get some other type of wing, some other scoring wing, like you mentioned, in which they should, because I think whoever their number two option for the wing, like their starting wing, is not on this roster right now. Like, it's not Dylan Brooks. I don't think that it's on this roster. So, I mean, they definitely should. They should go out and upgrade and try to get a player that can go out and get you buckets when you need to. And so I think it would really depend on what they do there with Kyle Anderson, because you know, he doesn't fit the mold. He doesn't shoot threes. Every time you see him, there's a lot of times there's a swing pass at the corner, and it's to Kyle Anderson, and he just sits there. And that's like the opposite of what Taylor Jenkins wants to do in this offense. So I think it's very interesting to see what they're going to do with Kyle Anderson in terms of what would they trade him. And they don't, like you mentioned, they don't have to do anything to sell D'Anthony Melton. They're going to re-sign him with a mid-level exception and be done. Like, they don't have to do anything to re-sign D'Anthony Melton. They're going to have plenty of space to do that. Now, like Josh Jackson, that's a totally different story because they can only offer him 1 year at $9 million or something like that because they declined his option. And Josh Jackson's going to get a multi-year deal. I think Josh Jackson's going to get 2-3 years, maybe 2 years with a team option, something like that, from a different team in this league. And if it's 2 years, even if it's, you know, $2 million less, if it's $7, $8 million a year, he should take that. Josh Jackson would 100% take that over the one-year deal with the Grizzlies. I don't think they've made him that much of an impact to them that he's going to have to stay here, because people, you know, I say this all the time, players largely stay in one place or the other because of money. I mean, if that's what this league is, it's a career. They're trying to make money, and I would do the same thing. So I think that's what's going to happen with Josh Jackson and D'Anthony Melton. I think you're right with Gorgui Dieng as well. Let's take another quick break. We'll be right back. We'll finish up with Joe Milnick from Grizzly Bear Blues. Welcome back to the show, talking with Joe Milnick from Grizzly Bear Blues, talking about his article over at grizzlybearblues.com that he wrote, and you can go check it out. Make sure you do, because that's what we're talking about. So I would say if you haven't already done it by now, you're probably too late. You need to go pause and go check it, look at it, and read it. The other part of the article was someone asked you if Dylan Brooks was our starting two guard for the future, or is that someone we're missing? Like, and I just alluded to it before we went to the break. I think you said it in the last answer too. I think you're right. I don't think that Dylan Brooks is the starting two guard for this future. I think whoever that starting two guard is isn't on the roster yet. And I think they're gonna have to go out and get that person. Whether that would it be my pick? Would it be like a Joe Harris, or whether it's a Malik Monk, which is also a good fan of mine. Like you mentioned, I think you mentioned Malik Monk in the article as well. Like, those type of players are somebody you could go out and get and could be starters on this team in that two guard spot. But I'm not sure. I don't know if Dylan Brooks is a guy that's okay coming off the bench after being the starter for a whole year.
Yeah, he started, I believe I did the math in the article, he started about 84% of his games as a member of the Memphis Grizzlies. And he plays with that swagger, right? Confidence that a lot of people love about him. I could see him not adapting to that role very well, almost in a Zach Randolph kind of way. And I don't mean disrespect to Zach. I would say Zach earned the ability to have an opinion on his role in the organization. I'm not so sure Dylan has. Dylan has been a good pro. Dylan has shown the capacity to score the basketball, especially from the beyond the arc. But he also can get to the basket, He is willing to take on the toughest defensive matchup on most nights. So I don't mean to disparage Dylan Brooks, but at the same time, I don't think he's your starting two guard on a team that's trying to compete for something beyond the eighth seed in the Western Conference. What I do think he can be, and I mentioned this in the article, is an updated version of what the Clippers have and have had in Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams. Because if you have Brandon Clark as your, you know, pseudo six man at the center and forward positions, and then you have Dylan Brooks as your pseudo six man at the shooting guard and small forward positions, obviously you have Tyus Jones and you have De'Anthony Melton beyond that. I mean, if you have Ja Morant, Tyus Jones, De'Anthony Melton, Dylan Brooks, Justice Winslow, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr., Jonas Valanciunas, that's a hell of a core right there, just among those eight or nine guys to build upon. Oh, and by the way, that's not including, you know, if you trade Kyle Anderson, Gorgui Dieng, and two first-round picks, that probably gets you somebody like at the very least, somebody like a Buddy Hield. Like, I don't see Sacramento saying no to that trade. If they can get two first-round picks out of it, plus some cap relief moving off of that long-term Hield contract, to be honest with you, I don't know if I would do that trade if I was the Grizzlies. But at the same time, I think that those opportunities are going to be there. If you're willing to add another first-round pick or maybe part with a young asset like a Grayson Allen or even a De'Anthony Melton eventually or someone like that, or even, hell, a Brandon Clark, I think Bradley Beal could be in play. If the Washington Wizards start next season and John Wall isn't what they hope he can be and they decide to hit the reset button and move off of Bradley, I think you have put yourself in a position, if you're Memphis, to be able to take advantage of his misfortunes, just like they did with the Andre Iguodala trade and how they got that first-round pick for essentially nothing. The Grizzlies are able to do that again, just in a different way this coming offseason. And if someone wants to move off of a big-money scoring wing, they're going to have the capacity to do that through the assets that they've acquired. I think that guy is not on the roster right now. Joe Harris, I like him a lot. Is he better than Dylan Brooks? I don't know. They're probably comparable. Maybe Dylan's a little bit better as a defender. Obviously, Joe has the three-point shot perhaps more than Dylan does. I think it would have to be somebody like I mentioned earlier, a Buddy Hield, a Zach LaVine, Devin Booker, a Bradley Beal. If for whatever those guys, or whatever reason, those guys are available, and it's very possible that all four of those teams, you know, the Kings, the Suns, the Bulls, and the Wizards, they all say, actually, he's not available. That guy's not available. He's not going to be available. A lot can change in the next 9 months, as we've learned just in the last few months of, or the first few months of 2020. A lot can change. A lot of things can kind of go through and really adapt or adjust, I should say, the perspective of a team. And maybe those guys are available. And if they are, Memphis is in a place, like we talked about in the segment, to potentially, you know, take advantage. I see Dylan Brooks in that Williams role, maybe not truly traditional in terms of playing the point guard a little bit and being that kind of player, but I think Dylan could play 20 to 24 minutes a night. He could defend lesser wings instead of being asked to defend the LeBron Jameses of the world and those types of guys, and I think he'll conserve energy there. I think you'll see a more efficient offensive output from Dylan if he has more energy offensively and he doesn't have to worry about chasing around opposing team's best perimeter player all the time through screens and around pick and rolls. I see the value in that, Dylan. If he's willing to not have his ego be hurt by a supposed demotion, and again, a lot of it's in the cell. You know, Lou Williams has won Sixth Man of the Year awards. Montrezl has built himself up to probably get a decent next contract if he chooses to go elsewhere from the Clippers. I really do believe that Dylan Brooks and Brandon Clark could be a version of that for the Grizzlies if they're willing to be. I think Brandon Clark would be. The question would be Dylan Brooks, given his experience in Memphis. And if he could kind of find it in himself to be willing to do that, it would make the Grizzlies that much better. Because like I said, a Tyus Jones, De'Anthony Melton, Brandon Clark, and Dylan Brooks as your four core reserve players, there are not many teams in the National Basketball Association that would have a better four-man core bench group than what Memphis would have if Dylan Brooks was able to buy into that mentality.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in terms of Dylan Brooks and what he can do off the bench. It's kind of the same thought process I've always had with, Jonas Valanciunas, if he ever comes off the bench for the Grizzlies, that those guys can literally, you know, I think they could destroy backup benches. And so you have, you know, if you could ever have, like, even if you don't, you know, include Jonas Valanciunas, but like you mentioned, a backup bench or a bench of, you know, Tyus and Dylan and D'Anthony and Brandon Clark, that's a really good lineup off four guys off your bench and knowing Taylor Jenkins, he usually uses, you know, 10. So like that's a really good start. So it's exciting for the future. Joe, I appreciate you coming on. It's good to talk about some Grizzlies. You want to do it again next week?
I would love to. Always remember, Mark, I know you know this because we've been working together for a while. If you need content, if you need just time filled, I think I'm going to be not the hero that Memphis wants, but the hero it needs in these trying times, I think. I'm good for a rambling conversation, and I'm good for a fluff piece over at grizzlybearblues.com. So man, Memphis. We're going to get through this together, guys.
That's why all of our shows together are like 45 minutes long, because we both talk. I always have shows and I'm like, this is going to be a short one, guys. I promise I'm not going to be long. And it's like a 25 minute show. So it happens. That's why you and I, our shows are always long, but that's okay. Cause that's more content, more for everybody to listen to. Again, I appreciate it, man. We're going to do it next week, cause we got a lot to talk about next week. It'll be crazy with all the news coming out about the NBA, but I hope that's true. Hopefully we get something coming out that they're practicing or something. So we'll see. Either way, we'll talk about something. We don't know what, but we'll talk about something next week.